Okay, so we are holding on Ayin Amud Aleph about a quarter of the way down. The Amud line begins in Waniach.
Where should we be holding?
Today is really supposed to be that fine hay. All right. Okay, so we learned in the Mishnah that you have the case of an animal giving birth to its firstborn, where if it comes out, then once it comes out, then it's going to be a bechor, it's going to be kadosh as bechor. So we said that if you're chopping off one limb at a time because it's having difficulty giving birth, then mashlech l'klavim, then fine, you can throw it to the dogs, but if most of it comes out, then it has to be buried because it's also b'hana. And we discussed, we had a machloikas Rav Huna and Rabbah. Do we say that the bechor becomes kodesh only at the time when 51% of it comes out? Or do we say when 51% comes out, then retroactively to the beginning of the birth, it was kodesh, which is relevant, therefore, as far as the question, if you sold part of it to a goy during that time, as relevant to the question, if part of it started coming out, you're to dofen to a C-section and the rest of it, and then most of it came out through the womb. And we explained that we said that our Mishnah can be understood according to either one of them. It has to be, otherwise we'd have to steer to one of them. According to Rabbah, it's fairly straightforward. We say the Mishnah had said that if Rubai comes out, then you cover. That would mean if Rubai comes out all at once. Well, it means if Rubai comes out all at once, because according to him, if it comes out piecemeal, even if you piled up the limbs that you cut off, it wouldn't be Kaddish Rebbechar. Whereas Rav Huna would understand to say that if at any time you have roiv together over there, then it will be considered roiv, and it will have kedushas bechor, and at that point you can't throw those pieces to the dog anymore.
So we said the Rambam paskins
like Rav Huna, the Rosh paskin that I'm afraid Hokadish for all these things, for some things it comes out a kola, and for some things a chumra, and the Rosh paskins like Rabbah. Part of the reason the Rosh says, first of all, actually in a few lines, Rashi uses the expression that we gave the answer, that according to Rav Huna, we would say that Yotze Rubai means not that Roiv came out all at once, but rather that it means that Roiv a little came out, and a little more came out, and eventually we have a Roiv. Rashi on a few lines of the Gemara further says that it's a shinuya d'chika, it's a shinuya ba'alma. It's an answer, but it's not really a very good answer. To say that Yotze Rubai means even if not 51% came out at once, but you have 10% here, 10% there, and so forth, and eventually it adds up, to say that that's what the Mishnah means, which is how we would have to understand it. According to Rav Huna, Rashi says in a few lines from further in the Gemara that it's Shinuya Ba'alma. It's an answer, but it's not necessarily... In other words, it was an answer. We use that to say that to not contradict Rav Huna, but it's not necessarily such a strong answer. On the face of it, the expression in the Mishnah, Yotze Rubai, means more like Rabbah says. That means that the majority came out at once. And therefore, the Rosh uses that as one of the proofs that the halacha must be like Rabbah in this machlokes. Because if we have to use a very gerichistic answer to explain the Mishnah according to Rav Huna, then that's one reason to imply the halacha is like Rabbah. So says the Rosh. Okay. Fine. Boy Rava. So Rava asks in this connection a question like this. Hochu be'evorin acha haroiv or loy hochu be'evorin acha haroiv? Do we go according to the evorim, according to the individual limbs, when we're counting the roiv? Do the individual evorim follow the roiv or not?
It's a form.
Well,
answer this question.
No. We established that once 51% comes out, everybody would agree at that point the animal is a bechor. The question rather is, suppose you have, as we're going to teach out in the Gemara over here, you can have a case. Think of it like this. You can have 51% of the animal came out. And again, by the way, we have to stress, all of this is only talking about if the baby animal was born not in the normal position. Normally it comes out front feet and then head first. And then at that point, once the head comes out, that's it. It's born and there's nothing more to talk about. The question is over here, if it came out.
What did Mishnah say at the beginning?
Because the Mishnah didn't mention it, because we learned in the Gemara on the first mission actually that we have an implication of it, and we had an implication of it in the first mission in our parak, and we have it more clearly stated in Bechoris in connection with a human being, and at the end of our parak in connection with an animal. So we know it's a given once the head comes out, it's born. So all these cases that we're talking about when we talk about the majority coming out, we're talking about if it's coming out not the head, it's coming out not head first, the breech first or whatever. Yeah. Okay. So the point is like this. Now, so you reach a point when 51% of the baby has come out, and then it's considered born. However, what about within that 51%, you may have some avarim where the majority of them came out, some of them where only a minority of the individual avar came out. So how does that work as far as the calculation? So the Gemara says, hey, Chidomi, what exactly is the scenario that Rava is asking about? Are you talking about that 51% has come out? Within that 51%, you have a minority part of one individual Aver. So you have, in other words, 51% has come out. But let's say towards that 51% count, 51% of the animal as a whole has come out. But within that 51%, so you're saying, let's say, for example, only 30% of its leg came out. So you're asking whether that leg should count towards the 51% or not, since most of it is still inside. Become a boyle, so then you would say that Rava is asking the question, hai mir deberoi, that you can, on the face of it, maybe we should explain, Rava is asking the question, this minority of the Aver that's already out, bosa roi de Aver shedinim lei, do we consider it that it has more to do with the majority of that individual Aver, which is still inside, and in that case it wouldn't count, because most of that particular Aver is still inside, or would we say that we go according to the majority of the Uber? Since 51% of the Uber is out, then it goes along with that.
Now we're asking about a specific Aver.
Yes, but if you're going to ask the question, if you're going to understand the question that way, Pshita, well, wouldn't that be obvious? There's no question. Once 51% of the Uber is out, you're not going to say, therefore, yeah, but only 30% of this particular Aver is out, so therefore we're going to discount that particular Aver and not count it towards the 51. Obviously not. Not so much it'll contradict everything we said, but the point is, in other words, obviously, roiv of the animal as a whole outweighs roiv of an individual Aver.
Otherwise
you would have to count. You would have to say 51%, meaning including that all of that 51% has to be all of the majority of Avarim. So that can't be what Rava is asking, because the answer would be fairly obvious. Actually, before we continue with the question, the Rishonim asked, isn't this basically the same thing as we asked before about Yesh Leida Leivarim or Ein Leida Leivarim, whether when an individual Aver comes out, is it considered already born or is it considered not yet born? We had in the second version, in the version of B'nai Ma'arava, we had a Machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan about that. So in fact, the Baal Amar says, you're right, this question would only be according to Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rav, either way, you would say that whatever came out came out, and once you have, he'd say once the majority of an Aver comes out, then it's considered as though the whole thing came out. So according to Rav, there'd be nothing to talk about. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, within Rabbi Yochanan's view, you could have the question.
Right.
That's how the Baal Amar learned. The Ramban,
according to Rabbi Yochanan,
you could say Ein Leido Le'Evarim, so the individual sticking out of one Aver is not considered that Aver is born, so therefore, in other words, we don't necessarily go according to the majority of it. Even the majority of it is out, we don't say the minority follows the majority, and therefore the whole Aver is also. That's what we said, that was the difference in that version between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. But within Rabbi Yochanan itself, you could ask, fine, so you don't say that the minority of the Aver follows the majority, but would you say that the minority counts towards the majority of the animal? Anyway, that's how the Baal Amar learns our Gemara. The Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban says, actually, they're two completely different issues. Because when it comes to Bechor, the basic issue is it Peter Rechem? Did it actually exit the womb? So therefore, even according to Rav, who says, Yesh Leido Le'Evarim, you could argue, fine, you say the minority of the Aver follows the majority. If the majority already went out, then the minority goes along with it, and vice versa. But you're not necessarily does that mean that as far as the Dinim of Bechor, where you need Peter Rechem, where it actually has to have exited the womb,
Not completely,
but in other words, that the individual Aver, so whatever came out, and whatever didn't come out, not necessarily. Would you say that what didn't come out yet should count? That's the point. In other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is, again, in the first understanding of Rava's question, which we're saying that's not the correct understanding, if we're going to say we're talking about that 51% of the total animal has come out, but within that 51% you have the minority of one Aver. So the question is whether that minority counts or not. Rav, who says Yesh Leido La'Evarim, might say, fine, once a certain amount of an Aver has come out, it's considered that whole Aver is born. But to say, as far as the Dinim of Bechor, that the part that's still inside should not only be considered like part of the outside one as far as the Dinim of Kashrus, but also as far as the Dinim of Keter Rechem, not necessarily.
So you mean to say that so far we've been basically talking about just the...
So far, we've been talking about the halachas of kashrus.
Yeah.
So now, when it comes to this issue, where you have peterechem, then it's a different issue. And vice versa, according to Rav Yochanan, even if you say, ein leid le'evarim, but the birth of an individual aver is not considered a significant milestone in itself. But on the other hand, once you have most of the animal out, or as Gemara is going to say, in the second half of the animal out, then maybe already it's significant enough that it would count towards it. So therefore, the Ramban explains there are two different machlokas in, and therefore the Gemara doesn't try to relate this to the machlokas before. Anyway, the point is that we can't say that... So, okay.
We did not really talk about that.
We didn't really, right. So anyway, but the point...
What is the answer, though, to
Tetzareh? That's the answer. That's why Rava has his question over here. Rava's question is not in and of itself directly related to
Rav and Rav. In terms of Tetzareh, what is the answer?
In terms of Tetzareh, that's what we're going to have to figure out. That's what we have to figure out. So, okay, but anyway, the point is that Rava definitely, his question cannot be where most of the Uber already came out, because obviously then whatever came out definitely counts towards it. You're not going to say that we're not going to count minorities of Avarim that came out because the majority of that particular Aver is inside, because the majority of the Bechur outweighs the majority of the Aver. So, no. Rather, Rava's question would have to be in the case where exactly half of the animal is out, but within that half, you have most of a particular aver. So therefore, become a boyolais, and now the question becomes as follows. The minority of that particular aver that is still inside the womb, do you consider that to follow most of the aver which already went out? In other words, what you would say is, in that case, you would say, let's say, if you have 51% of the animal, 50% of the animal came out. So if the baby, let's say, weighs 100 pounds, then, and the baby animal weighs 100 pounds, let's say, so exactly 50 pounds of the animal have come out. I'm assuming that when we talk about roiv over here, we're talking about weight. I don't know if we are, or if we're talking about the length of the animal, but whatever. Let's say we're talking about weight, to keep it simple. So 50 pounds of the animal have come out. Within that 50 pounds, you have a majority of its leg came out. The leg, let's say, weighs 10 pounds. So let's say, for example, at this point, 7 pounds of that leg have come out. Now, if we're going to say we only count exactly what came out, well, the only way...
70% if it's
10. No. Well, it's 70%, right. It's 70% of the leg. Right, that's the point. It's the roiv of the leg. So, that's the point. So if we go according to roiv of the animal, we don't have roiv of the animal... But one second. The minority of the leg, the 3 pounds of the leg that is still inside.
Still inside.
Mahu lemishtiye bata roiv aver. Do we consider it that it joins together with the 7 pounds of that leg that's already out? In that case, then it would count towards it. In that case, then you have not 50 pounds are out, but effectively 53 pounds are out. So therefore, you have roiv already, and therefore it's considered born, and therefore it would be a bechor, or maybe not. No, it's not the same question, because before we were talking about where roiv of the animal is out. Here we're talking about exactly half of the animal is out. To make roiv, we would have to include the part of the aver that's still inside. Do we do that? Or do we say that on the one hand, yes, most of the aver is out, so we should consider maybe the whole aver is out, or we should say no, because only half the animal is out. You don't have a roiv of the animal to consider the miut of the leg to go with. So that would be Robert's question.
50% of the animal and less than 50% of the limb.
No, more than 50% of the limb is out, and of the particular limb, right. Toshma, so let's prove from our Mishnah. We said in our Mishnah that if most of the animal came out, most of the baby came out, then we said it has to be buried because it was dead at that point. It has to be buried, and it's also b'hano. So my ruboy, what do we mean by roiv? Ilema ruboy mamish, do you mean literally ruboy, 51%? And here's where Rashi says, now the Gemara could have said, okay, but we're talking like Rav Huna, who said before that we're talking about where it came out piecemeal and you cut off a piece at a time. This is where Rashi says that that's a doichuk. It's a forced answer that we used in order to not slug up Rav Huna. It doesn't necessarily mean that Rava is forced to explain the Mishnah that way. He can understand the Mishnah more straightforwardly. The way Rava would explain it, that it just means only if 51% comes out at a time, at once, doesn't have to be just before. So if we understand it that way, then what's the chiddush? Ad hashtalay ashmein and derubik akoloi. What, have we never been informed before that rubik akoloi? We know throughout Shas that we have a concept of rubik akoloi. The Mishnah wouldn't have had to tell us that if most of it comes out, harezi yikov. But we know already once most of it comes out, it's considered born. And along, so therefore, why? So therefore, obviously, if the Mishnah has to tell us that point, obviously, it must be the Mishnah is talking about Rava's case, where you have only exactly half has come out, but within that half, you have Roiv of a particular half of the behemoth as a whole. But within that, you have Roiv of a particular Aver, and therefore, the Mishnah is implying for us that is considered Rava. Now, that would be a big chiddush. Because otherwise, we would think you go strictly
exactly off of the animal and rove of the limb.
But rove of the limb, that we should say that maybe the Mishnah is implying you do take that minority of the limb, count it towards the majority, and therefore you're over. They count it with the rest of the limb, therefore you're over. Therefore you're over the 50% threshold. That would be a big chiddush. The answer is why? No, not necessarily is that what the Mishnah means. Could be Kagan Shiyotha Ruboy the Miyot Aver. Could be that it is actually talking about the first case that we thought that maybe Rava is asking about, and we slugged it up, that can't be what Rava is asking about. That we said if most of the Uber came out, but within that majority, within that 51% of the baby is the minority of an Aver. The Kamash, and then so we said we thought to say that was Rava's question. We say, well, why would that even be a question? Wouldn't it be obvious that the roiv of the uber outweighs the roiv of the individual labor? Not necessarily. The Kamash, come on, maybe the Mishnah is telling us exactly that. The loish of kin and ruboy the uber to behemoth of azlin and baser aver. Exactly that. If the ruboy of the uber as a whole outweighs the roiv of the aver, you do not say in this case because only 30% of the aver came out, therefore you don't count that 30% at all towards making up the 51% of the behemoth. No, the Mishnah would be telling us you don't do that. Roiv of the animal is roiv of the animal. We said before, it's such a posh.
You can only equate roiv of the animal to the roiv of the limb.
We would say, in other words, that roiv of the animal outweighs roiv of the limb. So therefore, if you have the fact that you have 51% of the animal out, we don't care for that purpose whether individual limbs are out in the majority or completely or even a minority. Whatever is out and counts towards the 51%.
So why are we saying that?
So before
that's
we thought
exactly what we are.
Well, we thought that that's such a posh thing that Rava can't possibly be asking about that. But sometimes you have something that's posh that the Mishnah will tell us anyway.
No,
so that
I understand.
Okay.
But on the basis of what are we saying now so affirmatively that it's really obvious?
We're not. We're just saying that we don't have a proof. Okay. So what it is like this. We're saying there's two possible ways of understanding Rava's question. One of them we can prove from the Mishnah. Can we prove the other one? Not necessarily. We can prove that definitely the Mishnah must be telling us what we thought was so obvious that Rava himself can't even be asking about, that if Roiv of the Uber is out, then that's it. It's considered as though the whole thing, and we don't care about the percentages of the individual Avarim. Whatever's out is out. So we're saying the Mishnah is telling us maybe that exact point. You might have thought it's so obvious that Rava doesn't have to ask it and the Mishnah doesn't have to tell us. No, but that may be exactly what the Mishnah is telling us. But as far as the second understanding of Rava's question, that's still up in the air. Where you have 50% came out. 50% came out, but within that 50% you have a majority of an Aver. A majority of an individual Aver. So now you're saying, does the minority that's still inside count towards, as if it was out already, does it join together with the majority of that individual Aver that's out? That's still up in the air.
Why, if we say Ruba Kukula?
Ruba Kukula of the animal as a whole, not necessarily Ruba Kukula of the individual Aver.
So now we're saying Ruba Kukula applies Ruba to the
Kukula,
not the
because
other.
We're saying Ruba Kukula applies to the birth of the animal as a whole. It does not necessarily apply to individual Avarim. Again, this is the Ramban's point from before, that even if you say, like Rav, Yesh Leida La'Avarim, but you could argue Yesh Leida La'Avarim is relevant as far as the Dinim, that once most of an Aver is born, it's considered as though the whole Aver is born, and therefore the whole Aver is also to eat. Fine, that's as far as the genome of Kashrus. Not necessarily would that apply as far as Peter Rechem, where it actually has to have exited the womb.
I hear your point,
okay.
But I don't see why if you apply it to the animal whole,
because the difference is once 51% of the baby is out, the whole baby, even what's still inside, has Kedushas Bechor. On the other hand, when most of an individual Aver is out, nothing happens. That particular Aver, as far as the Dinim of Bechora, nothing happens when an individual Aver is out. You need 51% of the baby to be out for it to be considered a Bechora. So therefore,
now here we're talking about a case where 50%.
50% is out, so you don't yet have Yushas Bechor on the whole thing. In order to make 51%, you would have to be counting part of an Aver, a minority of an Aver that is still inside. Do you do that or not? That is Rava's question, and we can't necessarily prove from our Mishnah whether what would be the din in that case. So it's left as a Suffolk, and in fact, in that case, it would be a Suffolk Bechor. Okay. Now some other questions. Okay, so now Rava asks some other questions that have to do with the birth process. And basically, these various questions, many of these questions, well, the first series of questions that we're going to ask have to do with, when we say that the baby has to be Peter Rechem, does it mean that it actually has to touch the walls of the birth canal as it's coming out? So therefore, Boy Rava, forget C-section. We know it can have a C-section if it's possible. Never mind that. But, one second. Boy Rava, so Rava asked like this. Korchai b'siv mahu. What would happen when the baby is being born? What if you wrapped it in siv? Siv is a kind of, we've had the term siv before. It's a fiber stuff that grows around palm trees. In those days, they used it it'd be like the equivalent of a soft blanket or something nowadays. They would use it as a sort of natural padding.
What is rubber? Or?
Not rubber, no. Rubber is native to South America. It's vaguely similar to moss, but not really. Inside many trees, under the bark, you have a fibrous material over there. So that's what it is, basically. Anyway, the point is, so suppose you wrap the baby in it, so that its head didn't actually touch the birth canal of coming out, because you have the sieve in between. Or the talisa mahu, what happened if you wrapped the baby in your clothes and took it out of the womb that way? That's the question. Is a chatzitza relevant over here? The shulyose mahu, what would happen if the baby was inside its amniotic sac, what it grows in inside the womb? So if you want to interject, what do you mean? That's a normal way of being born. Many times it happens that the baby comes out still inside the amniotic sac. Why would you think that would be chatzitza? Rather, the question would be, what if you took the amniotic sac of one baby and wrapped this other baby in it and took it out of the womb? I don't know. Why would you do it as a question? Actually, first of all, a number of these questions are things that many of them might never happen. Especially, we're going to get to even more outre cases soon. We're going to get to even more unusual cases soon. Where on the face of it, many of these things outre, like off the wall. Uh-huh. So
what is it? French?
French, I think. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Whatever. Whatever. The point is, okay, so part of it is, it's used in English, look it up. We're not having an English lesson over here, so let's go on. The point is, okay, on the face of it, many of these questions are just highly theoretical. There's no way that many of these things would actually ever happen. On the other hand, first of all, there's the idea that Tosfos mentions in a few places that, yes, sometimes the Gemara will ask really off-the-wall cases because, first of all, Jewish for Kabbal Sky, it's all part of learning Torah. In terms of Chassidus, it's all part of Chochmaser, Ratzonish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem decided that we do have to deal with such rare cases, and we do have to figure out what the din is with them. The Alter Rebbe brings it as an example. One of these examples that we're going to have over here, the Alter Rebbe brings in Kuntres Acher and in the Lohavin Prophet Halachas, the Alter Rebbe discusses over there what's the source in Ruchnius for dinim like this that may never happen. But they're all part of Chochmas Yeretzon and Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But besides that, also, there's an idea that many times, so Tosfos themselves in some places says, but the Gemara is doing it almost as like a thought experiment, because based on what we're going to deduce from it, we can, based on the question, we can deduce some underlying principles about what it takes for a baby or for a baby human or a baby animal. First of all, there can be practical applications just once you understand what it takes for a baby to be a Bechor, a human baby or an animal baby, then first of all, that can be relevant to other different areas of halacha. Once you know, for example, here, whether a chatzitza is relevant over here, that can be relevant to completely other areas in halacha. And second of all, with many of these things, actually nowadays, new technology and all, many of these things turn out to be highly relevant as far as certain things. Surrogate motherhood, for example, we're going to see an example of it soon. Incubators, we'll get to that in a few lines. But yeah. Okay. Anyway, also, as far as this one, by the way, as far as the Siv or the Talis or the Shulia, actually, Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva on the subject. There's a subject discussed by the Achronim in the last 100 years or so. If a human baby, a bechor, is born using forceps, sometimes you have, the baby is not coming out naturally and they have to pull it out, they have to put forceps and pull it out. Is that considered a valid bechor that would need a pidyon aben? And you have some of the Achronim, for example, the Chelkas Yoyev, argue maybe not. Again, you have the problem of chafitza, the forceps or a chafitza between parts of the baby's head and the womb. But that's the question. If we're saying over here that a chafitza may make a difference, then maybe it's not considered a firstborn. In other words, it's a firstborn, but it's not necessarily peter rechav. It didn't necessarily open the womb in the sense that there wasn't full contact between the head and the womb. So you have it.
Peter
rechav means it opens the womb, literally, yeah. So therefore, you have peter, pei tes resh. It means to open. So therefore, you have Achronim, Machelkas Yoyo, for example, who argues that you shouldn't need a pidyon aben in that case. It's a machlokas among Achronim, so it's not like there's any higher authority to appeal to, but what I was going to say is Rav Moshe has a tshuva about it, in Igros Moshe, where he discusses, he mentions our Gemara over here, he mentions something that Avner Nezer wants to say about it, that maybe when it comes to pidyon aben, the whole issue of chatzitza is not really relevant, and Rav Moshe says, how is that even possible? Of course chatzitza has to be a relevant issue. However, Rav Moshe ends up saying that in that case, with the forceps, it's not a total chatzitza because most of the head is in contact with the birth canal. You only have the area where the forceps are. But besides that, so anyway, in the course of that shuvah, Rav Moshe points out in our Gemara, why on earth would you be wrapping the unborn baby in sieve or a talus or whatever? He says in order to warm it up. The idea is, in other words, that you would be doing this for the sake of the baby. The baby is going to be cold. Let's say the mother animal is giving birth during the winter. So you might try to wrap the baby in sieve as it's coming out to keep it warm. Or better than sieve, you might use your talus, which is, therefore, the Gemara mentions the talus next, which is even warmer. That might do a better job of keeping the baby warm. And similarly with a shilya, which is a more natural thing. Okay, fine. Okay, what about another case? Krochatu va'achazatu. So wait, we haven't gotten. We still have a series of questions. Hold on. Krochatu va'achazatu v'hotziatu mahu. And what happens? Here's another case. Suppose that first of all, according to Rashi, that she, meaning a woman, is helping this animal give birth. So she wrapped the baby before it actually comes out of the womb, before it actually comes out of the birth canal. She puts her hands around it. Krachatu means she wraps it in her hands. So her hands are chatzitza between the head and the birth canal.
She, meaning not
a woman giving birth. We're talking about an animal giving birth. We're talking about Rashi says a woman is helping the animal, helping deliver an animal. So if she puts her hands around the head before it comes out of the birth canal, va'achazatu, and she holds onto it, va'hotziatu, and then she took it out of the womb that way, mahu, then what would be the din? Are her hands considered a chatzitza? Now, Tosfos has a problem with that explanation of Rashi for a couple of reasons, one of them being that in general, in Shas, when we talk about helping animals give birth, usually instead of talking about women we talk about when we're talking about a human mother giving birth, that a midwife will help her. When we talk about animals, usually, in fact, on Amud Beis, we talk about a shepherd, a male shepherd, helping to give birth, because that's usually how it is. So there's a why all of a sudden over here I'll be switching to a female, krachatu, vachazatu, et cetera. That's one. There's a couple of other problems
it
also.
No,
the Tosfos asks, so why the change of lashon and a couple of other problems as well. Anyway, the Tosfos brings a gears. No, because what would be the difference? Whether it's a woman's hands or a man's hands, either way, the chatzitza is chatzitza. Anyway, Rabbeinu Tam prefers the girsa of Rabbeinu Hananel, which is that the second word is not va'achazatu, as we have in here in the Gemara, but achoisai, meaning his sister. And in other words, what we're talking about is over here another case. Suppose you have the animal is giving birth to twins. Suppose you have a male and a female animal that's giving birth to. So what happens if the female animal is wrapped around the male animal? So they're both being born at the same time, and yeah. So then the question is, so the Gemara says, hey, in that last case, at least, what's the scenario? What are you even asking about? If it came out head first, and then after the head came out, so according to Rashi, what we mean is after the head came out, then you wrap the head in sieve or clothing or in your hands or whatever. Well, what's the problem? Pekarte, of course, it's already potter from Bechara. It came, or Pekarte, not potter from Bechara, but Pekarte, it already came out of the Rechem. As soon as it comes out of Kodesh, who cares what we wrap it in afterwards? According to Tosfos, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, the question is, if we mean, we're talking only about the last case, if we're talking about that the female baby is wrapped around the male baby, normally, again, babies are born head first, animal babies as well. So if the female baby comes, if she sticks her head out first, Kautein, and at that point she's patered the mother from Bechora, because it's only Peter Rechem. At that point, the male animal with her is not Peter Rechem, because he's not the first one to open the womb. So what's the question?
Peter Rechem has to be a male.
No, well, yeah, in order for it to be a Bechora, yeah, it would have to be a male. So if a female animal, so if a female baby, then it's not Peter, so that's the question. That's what the Gemara is asking. Why are you even asking about that case? So no, rather you have to say the question is if the baby was coming out feet first. So again, according to Rashi, what we mean is this refers to all these cases so far. So the baby is coming, so according to Rashi, forget about when I saw her two animals being born. According to Rashi, all these four cases, the Siv, the Talisid, the Shoyosai, and Krachasu, Vachazasu, are all talking about one single animal being born. So we're talking about it being born feet first. Before 51% came out, the midwife or the shepherd or whoever it is reached in and wrapped the head in sieve or clothing or whatever, or in his hands and pulled it out, or in her hands and pulled it out. So would it be a hefsek or not? According to Rabbeinu Hananel, what the Gemara is clarifying here is only about the last case, where you have two babies being born. Suppose that the female baby is being born feet first, and then the male baby is the male baby comes out with his head between her legs, between her knees. So then the question would be basically similar to the other ones: are her legs considered a chafitza between him and the birth canal?
Is he considered federation?
If her feet comes first, then she had not 51% of her has come out, then that's still not federation. You have to have 51% to come out, or either the head or 51% has to come out for it to be considered born. So again, if her head came out first, no question, but if her feet came out first and it's not yet 51% of her, and then his head comes out, fine, so far so good. He is the Bechor. However, if her legs are wrapped around his head, then maybe that's a chafitza. That's the question, according to Tosfos. Okay. What about another?
Not really a chafitza, because the robe of his head is not covered by the leg.
No, but you could argue maybe it is. I mean, his head is small, but whatever. That's even if you say it's not, even if you say it's not really, whatever, it's a significant minority, whatever. It's,
more than 50%.
Okay. No, then that, I don't know. Well, that's what we're going to discuss soon, a different case. But let's say you could have that her legs are completely wrapped around his head. So no part of his head, or only a small part of his head touches the birth canal, let's say. Yes. Again, it's not necessarily a very likely case, but nevertheless, it's still something that we need to ask about in order to understand the parameters. So in Lomdusha terms, we need to understand the gedder of what a Bechor is. Does the gedder of a Bechor just involve that his head comes out before any other, or does the gedder involve that his head touches the birth canal? Yeah. Okay. Another question. Bla'atu Choda. What happens if, while the baby is in the womb, before it comes out, now we're back to a single birth. Magaloisa means his feet. So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about this one animal over here that came out feet first, and before the majority of it came out, you wrapped the head of it in a cloth or sieve or what have you. And according to Tosfos, the question is, if the female animal's feet comes first with the male animal's head between them. How about another case? Bla'atu Choda. Suppose that a weasel. Suppose that while the baby is in the womb still, a weasel crawls in over there. Bla'atu Choda. A weasel or whatever kind of rodent crawls in there, swallows the animal, the baby, v'hisi'atu, and then spits him back out again, or pulls him out of the womb in her mouth. Mahu. What would be the din? Is he considered born? Is he considered peterechem? What's his name? If she brought him out of the womb that way, I'll pick it. Obviously, there's no question. She brought him out in her mouth. He didn't touch the rechem, so it's exactly the same as the case of krachatu, where it's wrapped in the midwife's or the shepherd's hands or whatever. Why do you need to ask a separate case? Yes, didn't touch the rechem. Ella, no. We have to understand. Rather, we have to change the. We have to explain. The last case is bla'atu. Suppose that this weasel swallowed the baby, v'hotzi'atu, pulled it out of the womb, still in her mouth, but then v'hichnisatu, then she put it back into the womb where it was before. V'hichnisatu, she put it back into the womb, v'hichnisatu, then she spit it out in the womb, so now it's back in the womb, v'yotzme'elav, and then it came out on its own, mahu, so now what would be the din? Is it considered boom? Given that the first time it came out, it didn't touch the rechem, is the second time coming out from the same rechem considered that now it's a b'chor, it's petter rechem, or not?
For, chatos that goes out and goes back
in. No, that's a whole different thing. Chatos goes out, it becomes possible. There's no, but over here, you could argue the first time it went, okay, but it's not really a related thing. I mean, here, the first time it went out, it didn't touch the walls of the Rechem. So already we have the question of Trochatu and all these cases involving the Steve and whatever, but now, at least the second time, it came out naturally. I mean, you would have a similar case. You would have a similar case. If similarly, if the head was wrapped in sieve and then you pulled it out, then you put it back in and then it came out without the sieve, you would have the same question. The pasht goes in. Okay. So all of those questions, what would be the din? Another case that we can ask about, hidbik shnei rechamim, suppose that you put two rechems, one next to the other, so you have one animal is pregnant and is about to give birth, you take So the rechem, as I mentioned this morning, so the rechem is opening up, so you take another animal, you put its rechem next to the first one, the yosim is ever nichnas lezeh, so now the baby comes out of the one rechem and goes directly into the other one. Also a very odd ball case, sure. Mahu, but what's the question? Do you say gay potter? Do you say that only the womb only the womb that it grew in? So that one, it was potter. It opened that womb. Therefore, that mother is potter from bechora, and therefore he's a bechor there. The lavdi day like potter, but a womb that it didn't grow in, it's not considered peter rechem of. So the second animal would not be considered that it already had a baby. If later on that second animal becomes pregnant and has a baby male of her own, then that baby will also be a bechor. Or maybe you could say anytime Petra Rechem. The baby came out of a womb. It may not be the womb that it just stayed in. Doesn't matter. And the answer to all of these is Teku. So in the case of a Bechor Behema, we would have to be Machmer. But in particular, this last one about Hidbik Shnei Rechamim is brought in the recent literature of Halacha in the last 50 or so years, comes up as far as two cases. One of them is the question, when sometimes you have a premature baby that has to be put in an incubator right away. So effectively, it goes from its mother's womb into an artificial womb, because that's pretty much what the incubator is. Is that similar to our case of Shnei Rechamim?
It goes back to the womb.
No, of course it never goes back to the mother's womb, of course not, but it goes effectively into another womb. Hidbik Shnei Rechamim Zelozeh. In effect, it goes from the natural womb to, in effect, an artificial womb. Nevertheless, it became a Shaila. They asked, I think, Rabbi Yosef Shalom El Yosef about it. Fine. They asked Rabbi Yosef Shalom al-Yashiv about this question. I mean, look, the second Rechem is not where the baby grew either, but you could still argue it's serving the function of a Rechem. He answered that no, it's not. Meaning, in other words, it's not considered a Rechem for that purpose. One second. Okay, you think it's obvious, but nevertheless, the Shaila had to be asked. Meaning, in other words, therefore, if you have a baby Bechor, human that is, that was born and had to be placed in an incubator, when do you count the 30 days from in determining when to do the Pinyan Aben? You count from the actual birth. Not from when it's developed enough to go out of the incubator. That's the point. If we consider the incubator to be a second rechem, maybe we should say, misophic at least, we should have to consider that we only start counting from when it's able to go out of the incubator. But because we don't do that, because we don't consider the incubator to be a second rechem, so therefore we don't. We count from the actual birth.
But it's still a bechor?
Yeah, the baby's still a bechor, sure. He's still petter rechem of his mother. The actual birth. So in other words, if you have a that's the point. No, with a premature baby, we're talking a human baby over here, was born, let's say, after 7 or 8 months or whatever. Nowadays, where even premature babies can survive, so you don't have the whole 8-month thing that the Gemara talks about. So they right away whisk the baby off to the baby is born, let's say, Rosh Hashanah, and right away whisks off into an incubator. 2 months later, let's say, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, he's finally ready to be taken out of the incubator. When do you do the Pidyon Aben? Not 30 days from Rosh Chodesh Kislev, but rather 30, this is how Rabbi Yosef Shalom El Yashiv Paskin, 30 days from Rosh Hashanah, from when he was actually born. At the end of the 30 days, he's still in an incubator, doesn't matter. You can still do a Pidyon Aben at that point. So that's one.
Even though the time that he came out of the bed was not viable, unless he was always...
Yes, that's the point. And then the other case where this Hidbik Shnei Rechamim comes up is in the case of surrogate motherhood, where you have, they have the technology nowadays, and it's been done a number of times, where, baby is fertilized in one...
It's an embryo.
No, but the point is it's fertilized in one woman's womb, and then it's transplanted into another woman's womb, and then gestates over there. So now you have the question, which
sometimes
one?
It's fertilized directly.
Sometimes that's also true. That's a whole different question, but those are other issues involved over there. But here we're talking about if it's transplanted from one womb to another, or Gemara over here, about Hidbik Shnei Rechamim, is one of those sources that's brought to bear on the question, which one of the women is considered his mother, la halacha.
they do much less of these today.
Today they do a lot less of it because of all the ethical questions, because you have a number of high profile cases where the surrogate mother didn't want to give up the baby and whatever. So yeah, nowadays they're a lot more wary about it. But yeah. I've read also in this connection that they once asked for Moshe Feinstein if they ever perfect in vitro fertilization for humans and do it like on a regular scale the way they do with animals, what would be the din as far as the
in vitro fertilization.
Well, I'm talking about where they actually grow the baby outside the womb or whatever and then maybe implant it into the womb later or something like that. So he said, right now, it's not a relevant question because they haven't yet perfected it. If such a thing ever happens, then he says, I think that the second one would be considered the actual mother. But he didn't take a stand on it and didn't write a tshuva about it because it wasn't a live issue at the time.
Well, they did recently to take the DNA of the dinosaur, grow it into an embryo.
Okay, that's a whole different issue. Okay, that's a whole different issue. Okay, anyway, onward. Okay, but anyway, the point is that you see an example over here where the Gemara gives this completely off-the-wall case of Hidvik Shnei Rechamim and 2,000, 1,500, 2,000 years past, and all of a sudden you see that the poskim are quoting it all the time because it turns out to be very relevant to something nowadays that couldn't have even been dreamed of by the average person in the times of the Gemara.
So what about the twins here? That would be very relevant.
No, so the question of the twin, well, that's the question. Ultimately, we said teku, so therefore the male baby animal is going to be a suffix for her. And if it was two humans in the same way, then he'd also be a suffix before it would be a suffix, whether you need an opinion or not. Okay, but it still came out of her rechem, so is that considered that he was poter her rechem or not? Maybe not.
What do you mean?
That's what we said, this case of Hidvik Shnei Rechamim, where you have the baby leaves one rechem and goes directly into the other, which you positioned over there. So fine, obviously she didn't carry him for 5 or 9 or whatever it is months, but nevertheless, it came out of her rechem. So yeah. Okay, Boy Rav Acha. Now more questions in this connection. Again, to clarify, the doesn't matter. No. Peter means opening, so it still opened her womb. You could argue it came out of her womb, so therefore it doesn't matter whether it just stayed in there or not. Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Technical question. A rechem is a pregnant uterus.
No, rechem just means the uterus. The
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. The word rechem just means the uterus. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Boy Rav Acha. Okay. Now Rav Acha asks. Here's another question. Niftachu kosle beis harechem mahu. What happens if the walls of the rechem are wide open? In other words, again, normally the birth canal is fairly narrow and the baby has to kind of push its way through it. What happens if in a particular animal, or for that matter, I guess in a person, what if the birth canal happens to be exceptionally wide? So therefore, it's able to come out without touching it. It's able to just like shoot down the middle over there and not touch the sides. So mahu, what would be the deal? Avir rechem machdish
v'ikar.
That's the point. So therefore, that's the question. Avir rechem machdish v'ikar. Do you say that all you need is the airspace of the rechem, or the birth canal? That's what makes it kurdish. Well, then you have that, because it passed through that airspace. Or yomun negiyas rechem makadsha. Maybe not. Maybe only touching the rechem makes it kurdish. V'haleka. And here you don't have anything touching.
Well, you probably have some of it.
No, but not necessarily. It's kind of... In fact, actually, the Maharit al-Ghazi actually has, and so when we learn the Sefer Bechorah, that Hashem we're going to be referring to a lot, there's halachas that the Ramban wrote, that Ramban summarized the halachas of Chala and of Bechorah in a similar style to the way the Rish did with the rest of Shas, and then the Maharit al-Ghazi wrote an extremely long and detailed and lamed shapirish on it, where he brings up a lot of related issues, and one of them is this. He discusses our Gemara over here. He says the idea is, you have in various places in Shas, it discusses the issue whether Avir is considered like the actual, like it actually landed over there. But you also, one point, he brings for example, you have a case in Gittin, for example, where a person throws his wife a get, where it goes through, I think you have a, not throwing a get, actually, I think you have a case in Hilchos Shabbos, where you throw something through one window of a house and it flies through and flies out the other window. Is it considered that it landed in the house as far as Gittin, as far as Shabbos and whatever? So, and then the question is, whether Avir Shein Sofer Lanuach. So here, the Maharit al-Ghazi says, one thing that may be brought to bear over here, as you could say, it's also Avir Shein Sofer Lanuach, kind of. Not necessarily is it going to have to touch it. It's shooting out, so therefore it may not touch it, may not necessarily touch at all. Right. So it's a question. Okay. And Boy Marbaravashi. Marbaravashi says, here's another question. Neku kosle beis harechem mahu. What happens if the walls of the beis harechem, of the birth canal, whatever, have been uprooted. In other words, they've been cut off.
Right.
So Gemara says, what do you mean? Necru lessen. Obviously, if they're uprooted, if they're gone, then they're not there. And then therefore, obviously, there's no peter rechem. You can't say that the baby.
One second. That's why I asked you before. You said that The rechem is the uterus, not the vagina.
Okay, hold on. The word beis harechem means the entire area. Here what we're talking about is you have the rechem where the baby develops, and then you have what's called the proizder, the Gemara and Nida calls it the proizder, the antechamber, which means basically the vagina, the birth canal, whatever you want to call it. Fine. It's not the uterus per se, but nevertheless, it's all part of that thing. Okay, when we say heter rechem, fine, that's what we mean. It has to open and come through that. Okay, so then fine. Okay, so then fine. Then I guess so. We're making it clear. Okay, so then okay. So in the case of Hibbit Shnei Rechamim, right, it didn't necessarily have to go all the way into the uterus. As long as it went into the birth canal, that might be enough. Okay, anyway.
The birth canal is different.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's not. Yeah, okay, it's fine. Whatever. It's the vagina, call it whatever. Anyway, the point is, what if the walls of that have been uprooted? They're not there anymore. So then the Gemara says, what do you mean? Necro less?
The walls of the vagina.
Yes. They obviously have the answer is necro less. Well, if they're not there, then there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to be makadish this bechor, because we said it has to be peter rechem. It has to open the womb, meaning it has to be.
The walls are there, but they've been sections.
Yeah, in other words, so all you have over there is like you have the muscles behind them or whatever. You have the muscles and the bones and whatever behind them. You don't have.
Yeah, but just the birth canal, the soft canal
has been cut away. Yeah, cut away. No. You were talking about cut away. The necro means cut away. Well, sort of. Sort of. Yeah, it's like a exactly. No. Obviously, it's not coming out through the dolphin, but it's similar in the sense that it's not coming out through the birth canal, and therefore there's not
coming out through the birth canal.
There's no canal there. Whatever. That's the point.
Well, it's been enlarged.
Fine.
But section.
Okay, that's the point. The point is, in other words, there's no actual canal there. There's no coastal base rechem. There's no actual of the muscles and then whatever tissue there was supposed to be there.
It was ripped off.
Yeah.
It was section on the top.
No. Okay. So there's the womb, and then you have the womb as a whole, and then you have the birth canal, which is narrower. But if the inside of the birth canal has been removed, and all you have there, in other words, the Gemara is asking, are we talking about, let's say, that the whole thing has been cut off? You have the edge of the rechem right away goes to the outside of the world without anything. Well, then obviously there's nothing to be mekadesh for the heart. So what's the question? Ellen, right. So the question is, necro v'tolu le'vitzavari. No, the question is rather like this. What if the tissues of the base of the birth canal, what if those got uprooted from their place, they got torn out of their place, v'tolu le'vitzavari. What happened is they ended up inside the womb, and then they got wrapped around the baby's neck, and now when the baby's coming out, it's wearing it like a necklace. But now the question really might. The Mekoyman Makadshi, would we say that those walls of the Beis HaRechem, of the birth canal, are Makadish only when they're in their proper place? Shaloba Mekoyman Makadshi, here they're not in their proper place because they've been removed, they've been cut or torn or whatever from where they're supposed to be. Oidoma Shaloba Mekoyman Nami Makadshi, or maybe even that particular piece of tissue can be Makadish, the animal, even if it's not in its proper place. And it's around the animal's neck, so the animal's head basically passed through it, so therefore it would be considered Kaddish.
And what happens if you even go further than that? You have half that is around the neck and half that's not.
Okay, fine, okay. Boy mine, well, that sort of goes back to the previous, well, one second, okay. Boy mine rab yumiyim rab zera, nigmamu koisle beit harechem ma. Here's another possibility. What happens if the walls...
We didn't answer this question.
Well, we haven't answered any questions yet. Wait. The Gemara is going to leave most of these questions unanswered, even though it doesn't say teiku, except for one that we're going to have now, this question of rab yumiyah, which we're going to try to give an answer to. So, nigmamu koisle beit harechem mahu. What happens if the walls of the beit harechem are nigmamu? Now, what is nigmamu? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it means like this. You have, there's a thickness of these walls of the birth canal, of the vagina. Suppose you have that part of the thickness of that wall has been removed. So you have, in other words, it's supposed to be this thick, and now you have a couple of the layers of it have been removed all around, and now you have something surgically, let's say, or naturally, or whatever. And in fact, it brings over here from the aruch, that means nisaku, like they rotted away, let's say. Whatever, there was some kind of peeled off, whatever. Some of it could be disease, could be surgery, so it doesn't matter. Right? That's one explanation Rashi says of nigma mukais lebeit harechem. So the question would be, again, is it, so the question would be, does it still count as a bit? Not as it viable. We said before that, yeah, we're right. Is it considered petarechem passing through that part or not? The other explanation, Rashi says, is nigmamu means, suppose you have, now the birth canal has a certain length to it, so you can have, for example, that the tissues around the length of it have been torn away or whatever, but then you have the tissues towards the end of it, at the very end of it, right before it goes to the outside world, are still intact.
Okay.
So that would be the other explanation, as she says, of Nigam.
Where do you see Rashi?
The first explanation is right here, and the second one is on the last line of Rashi.
There's a ring.
So the second explanation is there's an intact ring at the bottom, and the other one is that the whole thing, part of it has been peeled, some of the layers of it have been peeled away, and some of the layers are intact. Amalei, the Rav Zeira answers, Kanagat v'boya di boyalon. You should know what you're asking about actually is connected with a question that I already had, and once I give you the answer to that one, then you'll automatically know the answer to your case for me. Namely, the boy Rav Zeira, because Rav Zeira asked, Ra'ami la boy mine Rav Zeira merabasi, the others say that specifically Rav Zeira asked by Rav Asi, Oymid meruba ala parut, suppose there's a certain circumference of the birth canal, so you have, there's a part of it that is intact, you can have part of the circumference is intact, that's called Oymid, and then you can have part of it is not intact, and that part is called parut. So suppose that you have, and we have in other cases in halacha, there's a difference between oymid and parut. In Hilchos Eruvin, for example, it's relevant to know how much oymid you have, how much solid you have versus parut, how much is open space, which then you're filling up with sort of a pesach or whatever. So oymid merub ala parut. Suppose you have in the birth canal, the intact part is greater than the non-intact part, the yotza derech parut, but the baby came out through the part that was parut, through the part of the birth canal that was chopped through. Yeah. Or parus merubala oimid, or the other way around. If the parus part is greater than the oimid, the part that was cut away is greater than the part that's left, the yotza derech oimid, and it came out by way of the part that's still intact.
Parus means there's a hole.
Parus means that there's a hole. Yeah. So
in the soft canal.
Yeah. Right. Right. So the point is, and that's Rav Zeira's question. So we see from that, ad kan lo yiboyalei ela parus meruba ala oimid. So Rav Zeira says to Rav Yirmiya, the question that I had is, the second question anyway, was where you had parus meruba ala oimid, where you have part of it is not intact anymore, part of it has been broken through, a minority of it is still intact. Ge'ika oimid ba'olam, at least there is an oimid over there. There is some part of it that is still intact. So then you can ask, is that intact part enough to be considered a refin? Avol nigmamu loy kamaboyle, but says Rav Yirmiya to Rav Zeira, when it comes to nigmamu, either of the explanations of nigmamu, either that the entire inside layer has been peeled away, or that a certain length of it has been completely removed, and all you have is a ring of it left at the bottom. Loy kamaboyle, I have no question about it. In other words, it's obvious that in that case it doesn't work because you don't even have an oimid to speak of.
You have the last ring.
But that doesn't matter. The fact that you have throughout all the rest of it, you don't have any interruption.
You're saying.
Yeah, basically. So.
And parutz miruba means what? It means.
Parutz would mean in other words you would have there's a ring over there. There's supposed to be a ring,
right.
And part of it is cut away, let's say, and the rest of it is still there. But now you have. You can talk about whether the baby was born in such a way that its head touched the part that was intact, or you can talk about where it came out through the hole that was there. So right, yeah. So Rav Zeira says to Rav Yirmiya, given that I had no reason even to ask about nigmamu, then obviously the answer is nigmamu would not count. So according to either of these explanations of nigmamu, if that happened and then the baby was born, it's definitely not considered a b'chor.
So nigmamu, you have two definitions.
According to Rashi, yeah, Rashi has two definitions. One where the entire inner layer of the birth canal has been peeled away, or
so
other somehow. So the head, in other words, so as it's coming out, there's no when it reaches that part, right? It's not called rechem anymore, right?
Right?
And the other possibility is where you have part of it has been completely removed, and then you have one ring at the end that's still intact. That would also be called nigmamu. Right. So Rav Zeira is telling Rav Yirmiya, you're right. The fact that I didn't even feel the need to ask that question, or that Rav Asi didn't feel the need to clarify, shows that those are not considered. Though it's obvious that those don't count. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, "Behema shemes ubra b'soich me'eha." If you have, till now we've been talking about where you have a pregnant animal where the baby was alive at the time of shchita,
right.
or where it was having a difficult birth and therefore you had to cut up the baby in order to save the mother, whatever. So now the next case, suppose that the baby died inside the womb. So the shepherd.
It means the actual
womb. Maybe you know what? Maybe a good way of thinking of it is me'eha usually would mean the womb itself. Rechem would mean the birth canal. Maybe I don't know if that's always a valid. Distinction. But fine. Okay. Fine. Okay. So anyway, so the baby died inside the uterus. So the shepherd sticks his hand in to pull out the baby and touches it. Whether we're talking about a tome or a tahar species of animal, tahar, either way, the shepherd is tahar. Now, on the face of it, he should be tome because he touched a dead animal. That's what we're going to deal in the Gemara. Why not? Rabbi Yosef Agvili Omer, the tmeya tome over tahar tahar. Rabbi Yosef Agvili says it depends. If it was a kosher species of animal, if it was a non-kosher species of animal, like a horse, then he would be tome from having touched this dead baby. If it was a kosher species, like a cow, then he would remain tahar. So the question is, my time of the Tanakhama. Why does the Tanakhama say that he's tahor either way? Now, the obvious question is, you have a concept the Gemara is going to bring up later called Tuma Blua. You have normally something that's not metame if it's inside the body, it's not metame. So normally you should say, okay, well, it's inside the mother's body. Why would we think it should become it should be metame? So
a bird. I mean,
no, well, that's it makes the tummy as you're swallowing it, the base of the that's very psychotic. Fine, but the point is, for example, if a person swallows something tummy, then even if somebody, let's say, sticks their finger down their throat and touches it, they won't become tummy from it. So tumma blua,
from touching
the thing that they never swallowed, whatever. So over here, why would we think the shepherd should become tummy from touching the dead unborn baby?
Someone swallowing something tummy will become tummy.
He himself may become tummy, but if somebody else reaches in and touches it. Okay, yeah, that's it, yeah. So the point is that...
Without touching the person.
Yeah, yeah. Rashi explains because later on in the Gemara on Daf Ayin Beis, we're going to talk about that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. Rabbi Akiva holds that Tumah Blua is Metame. Uh-huh. So we have to be asking, even Rabbi Akiva is not arguing in our mission over here, why not? Fine. So Amar of Chista, Kavah Chomer, the reason why even Rabbi Akiva would say he's not Tumah is based on a Kavah Chomer. If we're saying that the shchita of the mother, or that the mechitza of the mother, rather, makes him mutter to be eaten. Meaning, in other words, when we say the concept of ben pekua, when we say that you shech the mother animal, the baby inside, you're allowed to eat, doesn't matter whether the baby is alive or dead. Either way, he becomes mutter with the shchita of his mother. The limudim that we had before, from behema to behema, or from kol behema, whatever, apply equally well whether the baby is alive or dead. No, you don't. That's the point. Once you shechted the mother, as long as the baby was still inside at the time of the shchita, the baby does not need shchita. That's what we said before.
Is he alive?
Yeah, well, alive maybe, but the point is you don't need shchita. You can kill him any way you want. You could shoot him. You could chop off his head. You could do whatever.
It's not considered nevela.
It's not considered ez menachai, right. Because it became mutter with the mother's shchita. So therefore, if the mother's shchita makes it that this dead baby would be mutter ba'achila even, that you'd even be able to eat it, shouldn't it be at least as effective to make it that it shouldn't have too much nevela? So that is why the Tana Kama of our Mishnah says that he's not going to be tome if he touches it. Okay, Ashkechon Behema Tahora. Fine, that explains the Behema Tahora, because there you can check it. Behema Tmeya Menolan, how do we know the same rule applies to a Behema Tmeya? Rabbi Yossi Agrili is making that distinction in the Mishnah, but the Tanakama doesn't. So obviously he's saying that even if it was a horse or a camel or what have you, he's not Tomei. Why? You don't check the horse or a camel. So the reason is, Omakra, because you have like this. How do we know Tumas Nevela? The Pasuk says, you have a Pasuk in Parashat Shemini that goes like this. If there dies from among the animals which you're allowed to eat, then we say that anybody who touches it, it becomes Tumas until the evening. Tumas Nevela. So what do we learn? The double, in other words, the simple shot of the Pasuk is it's saying, if you have, for example, a dead cow or a dead sheep or whatever that was not properly shechted, then you touch it, you become tummy with Tumas Nevela.
Okay.
But you have to go to the mikvah and you have to wait for Harav Shemeshah. Okay, but the way the pasuk phrases, you have a double expression. You have v'chiyomus mina behema, and then it continues ashehi lochem la'ochla. So we're dashing those two clauses separately. The Meiri explains because in particular it didn't have to say asher, it didn't have to say the word he. It could have said v'chiyomus mina behema asher la'ochla or something. So the fact that it says he tells us to dashing them as two separate clauses. V'chiyomus mina behema zu behema tmeya. When it says if there dies from among the animals, that refers to a behema tmeya. And then when it continues, one second, which is the type of animal that you're allowed to eat, so therefore that's referring to a behemoth tahara. But because it mentions them in the same pasuk in connection with the din of tumas nevela, therefore itkash behemoth tmeya, the behemoth tahara, means we have a hekesh between the behemoth tmeya and the behemoth tahara. And the hekesh therefore teaches us
as well. Goes to the behemoth tahara, to the bitumeh.
Yeah, we say the same rules apply to both to a certain extent. Ma behema tahora ubra tahor, just like with a behema tahora, the unborn baby will be tahor, and we know that on the basis of the kavachomer that we just said, because you can even eat it if you shechted the mother, so how much more so it can't be matame. Af behema tmeya ubra tahor. Therefore, the hekesh is teaching us the same thing applies to a behema tmeya, even though the kavachomer doesn't apply, but the hekesh teaches us to apply it to that one. If you then what? Because then you're contradicting the kavachomer. But then you're contradicting the Kama. Then you. The Tanakhama says that whether we're talking about a pregnant mother or a dead baby from a Tomei species or a Tahir species, either way, touching it inside the womb, touching the dead baby inside the womb, doesn't make the shepherd Tomei. So if it's a Tahir animal, we know why, because we have a Kavachoyim. Because we're saying that this dead baby, you would have been able to eat it if you had shechted the mother. So how much more so it shouldn't be Matamei Tumas Nevela. How do we know? It applies to tereif animals. That's why we have the hekesh. The hekesh teaches us the same rule that applies to kosher animals, which you learn from the Kal Vachomer. The same rule will apply to non-kosher animals. Okay. Zer Rav Yosi Agrili, my timer. Okay, so then what is Rav Yosi Agrili answer to that? What is he answer to that? He says, Omer Rav Yitzchak, so Rav Yitzchak says like this, Da'omakra, because you have a different pasuk a little earlier in that parasha, that says like this, V'chol holach al kapav, it says any creature that walks on its paws, which means creatures like dogs and cats and bears and whatever that walk on their paws, they v'chol don't have hooves, so they're non-kosher animals, v'chol ha'chaya ha'ilachat, and the pasuk continues, among all the living creatures that walk on 4 feet. So therefore, in other words, what it means is, he learns, it means that any kind of creature that, again, you have the pasuk like this, again, when we learn the pasuk simply, we would understand means among all the highest that walk on 4 feet, any of the ones that walk on 4 paws are not kosher and they're nevela summertime. But the word bichol hachaya can also mean in the chaya, just like we said before, ba behema means in the behema. So therefore, it refers to an unborn baby. So the whole holach hakapa of any creature that walks on its paws, in other words, that doesn't have split hooves, even if it is ba chaya, if it's in the chaya, which you know holach salaba, which goes on 4 feet and doesn't have hooves, meaning mahalche kapayim b'chaya timesiloch, any creature that would walk on 4 feet without having split hooves, that is inside a chaya, meaning it's an unborn baby. Timesiloch, I, the Torah is telling you, have made tomei for you. And if you touch it, you become tomei from a sevela. So that's where Rav Yosi Agrili is getting his distinction between kosher and not kosher animals from that process.
So a pasuk is stronger than a hekesh?
Well, in other words, he could be using the hekesh for something else, or whatever. We'll see as we go through the Gemara. But the point is that he has a pasuk to show us.
Yeah,
right.
B'chol
achaya
means everything that's inside the
pasuk. Yeah, fine.
Okay.
Including the unborn baby, right? Okay, but before we even get into what he would do with the hekesh, we have to figure. He would say if the hekesh is being contradicted by an explicit pasuk, then it means the hekesh is teaching us something else. Fine, but we have to figure out. Okay, that's yeah. Ela me'ata, by your logic, if you're telling me, so what is the pasuk telling you? Any creature that does not have split hooves, which is inside the womb of another animal, is metame when it's dead. Well, ela me'ata, kolot from epara, we have our famous kolot that we've had a few times in our parish already, a kosher animal that's deformed and doesn't have split hooves. It's still holach hakapov. So according to Rav Yosi Agrili's logic, a kolos that's in the womb of a para, metame, should be metame. And Rav Yosi Agrili didn't make any such distinction. He just said that if it's in the womb of a para, it's not metame, regardless whether it's a kolos or not. according to, if we're learning from B'chol HaHoleh HaKapov, why shouldn't it be? The fact is, HaHoleh HaKapov, it doesn't have split hooves.
So did we learn that the Kalut is Metameh before?
No, we didn't. That's the question. Rabbi Yosef, even that's the point. Even Rabbi Yosef really is not saying that the Kalut inside the womb should be Metameh. Well, why not? The answer is, the question is like this: because after all, it's a creature that walks on that walks on feet. It doesn't have split hooves. So it's a mahalcha kapayim b'chayahu. It's inside a chaya. So therefore, so it should be matame according to Rabbi Yitzchak Levi, and it's not. Because even Rabbi Yitzchak Levi didn't make any such distinction. Now, Tosfos says the Gemara could have answered at this point. Okay, but the fact is, you have the Chisus Tzav HaChomer, you got to do something with it. However, the Gemara gives a better answer. The answer is Mahalcha Kapayim. Yeah, in other words, I can give a better answer than resorting to the Tzav HaChomer. The answer is Mahalcha Kapayim B'Mahalcha Arba. The answer is, what is the Torah telling you is Tomei, is when you have Mahalcha Kapayim, a creature that does not have split hooves, which is B'Mahalcha Arba, which is inside the womb of a creature that walks on four, meaning a creature that itself doesn't have split hooves, that the mother doesn't have split hooves. Okay, again, we have to refer back to the pasuk. B'chol hoylech hakapav, anything that walks on its paws, b'chol hachaya hailechas al arba, in, where that's how Rabbi Yosef Aglili is learning, the base, in any animal that walks on four. So Rabbi Yosef Aglili, in other words, is going to say that what does it mean walks on four? It doesn't just mean that it walks on four legs. Most animals do. It means four as opposed to eight. Kosher animals have 8 points of contact with the ground, because each hoof is split in two, so they have 8 points at which their feet touch the ground. Non-kosher animals have only 4, because they have unsplit hooves, or they have paws, or whatever. No, but fine, that's still considered, but they still have a paw, they still have a part of the paw that they walk on. So in that sense, you can say that they walk on four. So when are you saying, well, the answer is, why would a kolot from a para not be metame? Because mahalche kapayim, but mahalche arba. The only thing that would be metame is when you have something that walks on kapayim, that walks on unsplit hooves, but mahalche arba, that is in the womb of an animal that walks on 4 points of contact with the ground rather than 8. What do you have when you have a kolot? When you have a kolot in the womb of a para, sure, the baby is walking on only 4. Or would eventually, once it's born, walk on only 4. But the mother walks on 8 because she has 8 points of contact with the ground, so she has split hooves. So therefore, that's not what the pasuk is telling us. We mean matame. So therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi would agree that's not matame.
But he has 4.
Doesn't matter what the baby has. In order for it to be metame, it has to be 2 things. It has to be that the baby is hoylech al arba. It has to be that the baby is hoylech al kapav, that doesn't have split hooves, and that the mother is hoylech al arba, that it walks with 4 points of contact with the ground rather than over here, the mother has 8 points of contact with the ground. Okay. So therefore, it wouldn't be metame. Okay, but then you could ask the other way around. Para b'me gomol loitatame. How about the other way around? The same way as you can have a baby para that's born deformed and has unsplit hooves, the same way you can have, for example, a baby camel that is born with split hooves, with fully split hooves. And again, para b'me gomol, if you have something like a cow, meaning something that has split hooves, in the womb of a gomel. In other words, so in other words, you have a mother camel is pregnant with a deformed baby that instead of having partially split hooves the way camels normally do, this particular one has fully split hooves.
Like a para.
Yeah, well, like a para in that sense. That's what we mean para of a gomel. We don't mean it's literally a para, the gomel, but it has the feet of a para, right? So by that logic, you should say loy tatame. You should say it's not matame. Because there you have the other way around. The baby has 8 points of contact with the ground. The mother has 4. And yet again, Rabbi Yosef Aglili had just said in the Mishnah, if it's behemah tmeya, then tame. Behemah tahora is tar. He didn't make any such distinctions. So why not? The answer is because the pasuk doesn't just say holach. It says holach. It says b'chol holach. And anything that walks on 4. Meaning the rabbi is part of an egomel. That comes to include this case. Even if you have a para-like creature in the womb of a gomel, but because it's included in v'chol hoylech. So therefore, it would be matame, says Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. Okay, still, the question is, colored from a klutza, letame. How about another possibility? What if both the mother and the baby have this mutation, have this deformity, that they don't have split hooves? So the mother is a kara and is kosher, and she doesn't have split hooves, and the baby also doesn't have split hooves. That would be mahalche arba. That would be holach al kapa mahalche arba. By Rabbi Yitzchak's logic, explaining Rabbi Yitzchak Ludi, it should be metame. And again, Rabbi Yitzchak Ludi made no such distinction. So kolot from a kol to litame, the mahalche abba, mahalche abba, because the baby walks on four and the mother also walks on four. The answer is lahochi ahani kavachomer derechista. For that, we have to resort to derechista kavachomer. After all, the fact is we know that the mother is kosher; she's not traced because of this deformity. The baby is not treif either. And in fact, if you were to shech the mother, the baby would be mutter to eat whether you found it in the womb alive or dead. So now we can use Rav Chista's Kavachimer to say if you're even able to eat the baby as a result of the mother's shechita, how much more so it shouldn't be metame. So even though it would fit the criteria in the pasuk on the face of it, because it's a creature with 4 points of contact in the womb of a creature with 4 points of contact, but because of Rav Chista's Kavachimer, that tells us that in that case it's not metame.
What do we do with the principle of Kariyot in Yatara?
That's true, Kariyot in Yatara Tara. But here, that's true. We do apply it over here. That's why we're saying the baby is Tara. But that's what I was saying, the baby is kosher. Once the baby is born, then in other words, it can require its own shechita. Here we're dealing with the question, is it allowed when it's unborn yet? Or not so much, we're not dealing with whether we can eat it, we're dealing with whether it's metame when you touch it. And the answer is, Rav Chista's Kavachomer tells us that it can't possibly be metame. If it's mutter to eat even, it certainly can't be metame, chumas nevela.
But that's only because it's not born.
Well, right. I mean, once it's born, then it needs its own shechita anyway. Then there's nothing to talk about.
It's a baby that's star.
Yeah. That's what we're saying. Fine. Well, we'll have to stop over here because might have time. But if you think carefully into this, then you might see so far a very strong question on what we said so far. Let's just review, and then you can chew over the question and then see what you think about it. What we're saying so far, based on what Rabbi Yitzchak is telling us, is if the mother animal has 4 points of contact with the ground, and the baby animal has 4 points of contact with the ground, then the dead baby is metame according to Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. Never mind the Chachamim, here we're dealing with Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. But if the mother and the baby both have 8 points of contact with the ground, then the dead baby is not metame.
So if one has eight and the other one has...
Never mind if one has eight and one has four. We already dealt with that. If the mother has eight and the baby has four, we said it's mutter. Because if she has four and the baby has eight, we also said it's okay. It has to be. Well, if the mother has four, there's not even there. Yes, if the mother has four and the baby has eight, there's nothing even to talk about. The baby is definitely not Hoylech HaKaplov then. Again, the baby has to be Hoylech HaKaplov, that he walks on his paws or otherwise on four rather than 8 points of contact. So if the baby has 8 points of contact, then for sure it's good.
He's missing a leg. What's going on?
No, well, if it's missing a leg, no. But we mean, in other words, it has to be the type that it would have 8 points of contact. In other words, if it has four complete legs. But now we have to consider: is it correct to say that only kosher animals have 8 points of contact in the ground? Are there any non-kosher animals that also have eight, and their babies have eight? Aha! That's going to be the most question. That's what we'll leave the question for tomorrow, which the Gemara is going to deal with that. That's on the face of it. How is Rabbi Yitzchak really saying as a blanket statement that any time when they're talking about today for animals, your tummy from touching the baby, based on what he's saying, a baby has 8 points of contact, the mother has 8 points of contact, it shouldn't be metame based on this, and yet it is. Why?
Yeah,
a dead chazer, of course, is metame, but a dead unborn chazir, if we're saying we have to learn it, if we're saying we're learning it from B'chol Harla HaKaplev, why should it be metamet? That we're going to leave for tomorrow and figure that out. Okay.